Would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I'll be honored to do so, sir. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Director, good morning.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed.
I'm trying to get Rich Wooten on the phone.
Please hang up and try your call again later.
We'll keep trying. Thank you.
Well, good morning,
Chairman,
sir. Members of the board. Thanks for being here this morning. I just wanted to go over a few announcements at first. Gene Galvin from the Arizona Attorney General's Office will be providing the board with legal advice should it be necessary during the three final action cases to avoid any conflicts. We'll be pulling a few things from our consent agenda, all dealing with our training deficiencies. If you look at your list, it's quite lengthy of the people that we identified for the board for training deficiencies for 2017, I apologize. We're going to be pulling all of them with the exception of two. So Tim Stevens and Daniel Van will still be listed on the consent agenda as failing to or being deficient, showing a training deficiency. For 2017, the rest have all, with the exception of Terry Calabrese Kapronka, we're going to pull her off the consent agenda and handle her as a separate line item after the consent agenda vote because her legal counsel would like to be heard reference this matter. So we're going to pull her off. So just to clarify, the only ones you'll be voting on for consent agenda are Tim Stevens and Daniel Van.
Okay, and we'll be hearing about the one you mentioned.
Yeah, Terry Calabrese. Right after the consent agenda item. Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
And then one other change. I didn't see her, and I apologize, but I was just advised this morning that the governor has appointed a new director to the board for our civilian member. It's going to be Jamie Kelly. She's the current executive director of Not All Heroes. I was told she might try to make it today for the meeting. Again, I was just advised this morning, but we'll get her through the onboarding process in the next month, and she'll be at the board meeting in January. We're also working on filling the other two positions through the boards and commissions that we currently have, which is the jail commander and our police chief of a city less than 60,000 residents. We're working through that now with boards and commissions. Those are the only announcements I have.
Okay, do we have something with the executive director's report?
Do you want to go right into that?
Sure.
Okay, I can do that. I talked last month about going up and visiting with the Navajo DPS, reference some issues we were having with their academy, for those of you who don't know. And I'll put this on the next agenda for further discussion, but I just wanted to keep you aware of what we're doing here at Arizona Post to work with Navajo DPS. Just for your information, at the end of 2017, going into 2018, Navajo DPS had said they wanted to start their own academy again. So we were in the process of going up there to certify them. Shortly before it started, they canceled our meeting and put it on hold. Unbeknownst to us, they did start an academy, not sanctioned by Arizona Post or approved by Arizona Post, and put through 12 recruits. Jack, my predecessor, has been working with them off and on, trying to engage in dialogue to work through that, to address the concerns we have with, now they have 12 officers that are not Arizona Post certified, and they're not certified in any of the surrounding states where they also provide law enforcement services. I went up there the middle of November and met with them to discuss. We're still in discussions. I'm hopeful that they'll come to the table, allow us to certify their academy, allow us to certify their hiring process, and go back to business as usual. But again, I'll put this on. I just wanted to kind of put it in your minds so we can have a further discussion in January. But I'm continuing to work with them, and I'll have a better update for you in January as far as my progress goes. But I didn't want you to be caught off guard because they had 12 graduate last year, and they have 19. As of the day of my meeting, they have 19 in their academy now that will not be state certified when they graduate. So, again, just something I wanted to make sure everyone was aware of. At the direction of the board last month, we started researching rule changes related to some of the issues that we're seeing with drug use for our applicants. It was funny, Steve Jacobs was able to identify or locate information. We're very good at record keeping here. He was able to find information from the early 90s were when we the board actually identified what experimentation meant when it concerned marijuana use. That was a two-year process. It will not take us 2 years to work through this, but it's very labor-intensive, and what we'd like to do is, beginning in January, we'd like to start putting together a work group. We want to make sure that all the agencies across the state are represented, and then we'll start working through what, if any, changes the board, as well as our partner agencies, would like to see instituted to assist us with recruiting and retaining qualified applicants. Again, that's just to give you an idea where we're at in the last month, what we've done to move that needle forward. Just a couple other things that I was able to do this month. I accompanied Cindy Sawyer up to NARDA in Prescott Valley just to administer the comprehensive final exam. I was able to tour their current facility with their director and then go over and tour their new facility. For those of you who don't know, their Yavapai College is adding, is redoing a couple buildings. They've built a new building for their defensive tactics. It's a really well-run organization. I was really impressed with the level of not only personnel support, but financial support the college gives to the program. Mm-hmm. It was really reassuring to see. And again, I think we had just about 23 or 24 applicants, it was exciting to see the new direction that they're going. So that's kind of my plan, is to get out to all the academies in the next several months. Obviously, with the holidays, it became a little challenging to schedule anything for now. But beginning in January, you'll see me starting to go and hit all the academies around the state just to see what they're doing and see how we can be better partners to them to help with their mission.
Well, thanks for doing that.
That's absolutely.
The college up there has worked so hard as a partnership with all those law enforcement agencies, and it's really shown. So thank you.
Absolutely. Just a couple other things. I attended a working group at the state legislature as we prepare for the opening of the legislature in January, or the session in January. Again, it was a collaboration of some of the labor groups, of different police chiefs, and we had some good discussions on topics that are coming up for 2019. And I just want to make sure that we have a seat at the table in those discussions so I can make sure that we're well represented. I also attended the GOHS Impaired Driver Roundtable at the Capitol with the current deputy director of NHTSA. And it was funny because she actually called me out in the meeting and said it was the first meeting she's had across the country where a director from POST had been in attendance, and she was really happy to see that. Yes. Because it all starts at your basic academy. Mm-hmm. And then in continuing education as well. So she was happy we're there, and Alberto Gutierrez continues to be a good partner to Arizona POST. I also attended the Arizona County Attorney and Sheriff Association meeting and also the Arizona Sheriff's Association meeting. I'm very big into relationships. I'm very big into making sure that we have a seat at all those tables. So I'm going to continue to go to those meetings, glean information from our partners, as well as provide information back to them on what the board and the rest of the Arizona Post staff are doing. And then again, just like I said, I met with Emily Radjukovich, the director of boards and commissions. She's fairly new to her position, but she's been very, very helpful. And hopefully, like I said, by February, I'm hoping to have all three of our, as of today, we only have two openings. We'll have those all filled.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I apologize. The last thing I did, I just got back last night. I attended the Western Conference of IATALIST, which is the International Association of Directors of Law Enforcement Standards and Training. It was really interesting. I got to meet eight of my peers from the Western Conference. And what I found most amazing was we all have the same mission, but we're funded differently, we're staffed differently, and we all have different priorities. The meeting was hosted in Oregon, and as for those of you who don't know, Oregon has one central academy that's in conjunction with their POST. It's really, really well done. They're doing some really progressive things in training. I took about three pages of notes listening and talking to all my peers, made a lot of really good connections, and I can't wait to share this stuff with the staff here. I know they have a lot of ideas, and this will be helpful because, again, there's no need to recreate the wheel if other states are already doing something that we like, that we can do. So I look forward to bringing new ideas to the board over the next year on how we can move forward. But with that, I will be happy to take any questions the board may have.
Alex, yes.
Mr. Chairman. Matt, just one thing. After you guys met with the legislature about the cost to train, I would suggest that all of us look at, but especially if you guys, as you're looking to what the true cost to train or recruit is, I think, and I will tell you that at Arizona DPS, our number is flawed. We don't look into the hours. We don't look into fuel, into mileage. We don't look into the time associated. Our number that we give the legislature to train a recruit is low. It's wrong. And so I think what happens is, well, this is what we've done. We've always done it this way, so we're going to keep doing that way. But we're not. We're changing that. But I would just say that maybe our agencies get together and really talk about what that number is, so when we give that number to the legislature, that it's accurate. It's in law enforcement, we're always very good at trying to make things as palatable as possible instead of being incredibly accurate. That's all I would say. So
okay. We can definitely work on that. Phoenix Commander Jen LaRocque was in attendance at the training I just went to, and we had several discussions about the cost of training and trying to get that accurate number. So, yeah, we can work on that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. So, Matt, each year the governor has done an executive order basically putting a moratorium on rules, revisions, and change. So just putting that on your calendar, if we think we are going to go through this process this coming 2019, you'll want to, once that executive order is issued, you'll want to reach out and get an exemption. And typically we had done that through Tim, his public safety policy advisor. I don't know if they've appointed a new person in that role yet, but that would be the person you would want to send the information to, and they run that through the process
okay.
for you.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Well, then I have an addition to that, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not. It needs to be agendized, but I do want to talk about a possible rule change as well. So
okay.
Whenever it's appropriate to bring up as new business.
Absolutely. If you just give me the topic, we can put it on next month's agenda to discuss. Absolutely.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, we're going to move on to the consent, but before you leave, I'd like to go over again the changes so we
Certainly.
Can get that motion correct. We are going to be leaving Officer Stevens and Vans on.
The only two you'll be leaving on the consent agenda for training deficiencies, correct?
And then we're going to speak about one other after this, and which one was that again, Evans?
Terry Calabrese Caponca.
Okay.
And then I've just been reminded, I apologize, but I wanted to notate who is here. We're missing Sheriff Gannels. Rich Wooten, is he on the phone yet?
I am on the phone.
Okay, so Rich Wooten here. So our only missing member today would be Sheriff Mark Gannels. Everyone else is present.
Okay, very good. And then so far as the next item on the agenda, the consent agenda, I would entertain a motion for approval.
Mr. Chairman, this is Andy Lefebvre. I move that we accept the consent agenda as amended.
Frank Milstead, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And
aye.
Okay. Those against? And the motion carries. And we will now hear from someone on
William Caldwell.
We'll hear from Seth Hargraves on
okay.
the training deficiency for Terry Calabrese Caponica.
Okay, there
and
we
then we'll
go.
Let Miss Bailey speak on
okay, Seth. Good morning, sir.
Seth Hargraves, Assistant Attorney General. This was a matter pulled from your consent agenda regarding training deficiencies. Under your rules for firearm qualifications, peace officers are required to qualify annually in order to be authorized to carry a firearm. Under your rules, the board shall restrict certified status if the officer fails to satisfy those requirements. Ms. Caponica, her attorney, wants to address you regarding the issue of the deficiency for 2017. Under your rules at meeting to discuss that, you are to determine only whether the peace officer has successfully completed the required training or qualification and can produce documentation to verify it. Staff had gone out, done a compliance audit with the City of Surprise in regards to Sergeant Caponica, found that she had passed 2016, she had not passed 2017, the last test having been administered for 2017 year in December 26th of 2017. Documentation provided by Surprise documents that she had as yet to qualify for that time period. So I'll allow her attorney to address you.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair and members of the board. My name is Catherine Bailey. I represent Sergeant Terry Capronica. I'm here. I understand what the statute says and what your requirement is, but I believe that this board needs to understand what has happened with this sergeant. So as you were told, in 2016, Sergeant Capronica did, in fact, qualify on her firearm. In 2017, on January 10th, she was injured during a defensive tactics training, and then she was placed on, she was not able to do the qualification on February 7th when the rest of her group surprise did actually do the firearms qualification because she was restricted from her doctor and was not released to full duty. And as you know, as police chiefs and sheriffs, that if you are not released from your physician, you cannot go out and qualify, and you're not allowed to perform any police officer duties because you are not fit for duty. As of March 1st, Terry was placed on a light duty status, but again, even under light duty, a police officer is not allowed to go out and qualify. They're not allowed to do their training while they're on light duty until they are released to full duty because, again, they're not fit for duty. On March 7th, Terry was provided a note from a Sergeant Filler. Sergeant Filler is the sergeant over the trainings unit in the Surprise Police Department. And in that notice, it said for the duration of 30 days, Terry shall not shoot outside of the training unit with any weapon. At that point, Terry obeyed the sergeant because the sergeant was a sergeant over training. On March 17th, there was no training scheduled for Terry. Again, there was a modification from Sergeant Filler because Sergeant Capronica Terry went to the chief and said, well, how do I get prepared to qualify if I can't shoot? The other thing that this board needs to understand is that the Surprise Police Department had changed weapons. Everybody went to a Sig Sal from what they had. And so there had to be training on using the new weapon. And that is what Surprise was doing at the time. So on March 17th, the new PIP, as they call it, or memo that came from Sergeant Filler was no shooting outside the training unit with the department-issued weapon, but told by Commander Rody, R-O-D-Y, not to shoot any gun anywhere on March 17th. In May, there were three training sessions, May 17th, 24th, and 31st. However, they were not offered to Sergeant Terry Capronica, and she was not able to attend those trainings. November, there was three training sessions, the 9th, the 14th, and the 30th. And then in December, there were two training sessions. On the 6th or the 7th, there were she qualified actually on December 20th and did not pass the qualification. And that is because she did not have the training. So when you're looking at the letter of the law, it is true that from January 10th through December 20th, Terry Capronica did not qualify on her weapon. But she wasn't able to do so. Then what we did is in 2018, thinking about, well, is there an opportunity for this officer to take a qualification? Well, unfortunately, and this is what is important for this board because we're here on December 20th, 2018 now, we have Sergeant Capronica, who was put on light duty for a torn disc from the defensive tactics training in February of 2018. In May, you have the doctor releasing her with certain stipulations so that she could attempt to train with her firearms. But then while she was out at the range, She injured her foot, and so she crushed the bone in her foot. So it's not something where she just twisted her ankle. It was a crushed bone. She went into surgery, and since May of 2018 until December 3rd, she has undergone surgeries, and on her foot, she has gone physical therapy, and on December 3rd of 2018, she was finally released from her surgeon saying, "You are fit for duty, go be a police officer, do what you need to do." On December 3rd, Sergeant Kapronica notified the training department at Surprise and said, "I'm ready, can we train, can I do my qualification?" The training department said, Sergeant Filler said, "No, we don't have any time until December 18th. So, December 18th, Terry shows up and asks, December 19th, it was yesterday. She shows up to her training for firearms training and asked, "Could I qualify?" And they said no. So she is not even, based on Surprise and the training department, no fault of Chief Young, but I will tell you, Chief Young did advise us that he would be available to talk to this board on the phone. He was not able to be here. We did ask him. I did not ask him, but he was asked through Sergeant Kapronica if he would be here today to speak on her behalf, and he said that he had an engagement that he could not get out of, but he would be available by phone. If this board would like to speak with the chief, I would encourage the board to speak with the chief, Chief Terry Young. But she's not even, based on Surprise, training department, she can't even qualify until January, and that's what they told her yesterday. We're going to go through the training, and you'll qualify in January. Now, what you need to know is, in Surprise, she is not acting as a police officer. She is behind a desk because she is restricted, even by Surprise standards, not to take action. The reason I'm here today is because this board is taking an action restricting her certification, and it goes on her record. And it's out of her control. And so that's why I'm coming. We don't usually come on restrictions. We know what the law says. But in this case, it's just so different. And there wasn't an opportunity. And under FMLA and the ADA standards, we have to give, the city has to give her lenience while she's recovering. So I won't belabor this issue, but I would ask that in this circumstance that the board would extend her ability to qualify before the restriction into January, when Surprise training department said, "You're going to qualify when we're finished with the training, and when and we're going to say that you're going to be finished in January, so we're going to have you qualify in January."
Thank you, Ms. Bailey.
Thank you.
Any questions? Comments? Seth, did you have some follow-up on this? Or?
Yes. According to the documentation from the City of Surprise, she actually did do the remedial training on May 17th, May 24th, and May 31st, and thereafter took.
Was that of 2018 or
2017?
2017.
We're looking at 2017. The issue is whether she met qualifications for 2017. On March 7th of 2017, she was placed on a performance improvement plan to correct performance deficiencies noted in her 2016 qualification and remedial training. She thereafter underwent training on May 17th, 24th, 31st, took a qualifying test, and failed. She was placed on a second performance improvement plan in November, thereafter underwent training on November 9th, 14th, 30th, December 6th, 7th, 13th, and 14th. She was provided the qualification exam on December 20th, failed the first two attempts, did additional remedial training, and then on December 26th, 2017, and failed to qualify at the third attempt. Now, whatever happened in 2018 regarding medical leave or whatever is pretty much irrelevant. The issue is, did she qualify in 2017? The records indicate she did not. Under your rules, you're required to restrict. There's no provision in there allowance for anything other than that, unless there's documentation provided to show that she has met qualifications, which to date there is none for 2017. While she may not be able to test recently, your rules are clear. In order to maintain your active certification and be able to carry a firearm, you have to meet qualifications. There's no documentation in this case showing that she has. So under your rules, I don't believe there's any discretion here other than to restrict until such time as she meets qualifications.
Questions, comments?
I do have a couple questions. Pardon me, Seth. So I understand this. So if we restrict, then that takes her out of the retirement system for the number of days that she's been restricted. Is that correct? So she has to put those number
that
of days
in? That I don't
in?
Know.
Okay, because I'm trying to see what the damage here is. If she's restricted, as soon as she qualifies, even though she didn't qualify for the whole 2017 and at this point the whole 2018,
the restriction
she goes
lifted.
To the restriction is lifted.
Correct.
Right. So without knowing that, we really don't know what the harm here is.
Well, you have.
She's not carrying with. She's not carrying presently.
Well,
she won't carry until she qualifies.
Well, she won't. She won't carry if you restrict her as your rules require. Otherwise, there's nothing to prevent her from carrying.
Okay.
You know, the city may do that on their own, but they're under no obligation to. That's, you know, as far as her certification, that falls within your purview, not the city's.
I understand. I'm just trying to see what the harm here is.
Well, you have someone that's not meeting your minimum qualifications.
No, I'm sorry. The harm of voting to restrict. Sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Sir.
Seth, so what you and Ms. Bailey said are kind of opposite. You're saying that on six occasions in 17, she had received training on the transition to that new firearm and then failed to qualify at the end of those three training sessions.
The documentation shows that she went through remedial training on those dates. Specifically, what that was, I don't know, but it was firearms training to get her up to correct performance deficiencies from the previous year.
Okay, but you're saying 6 days she trained, twice she failed to qualify. Ms. Bailey says that she wasn't able to do those because of restrictions and that the supervisor wouldn't let her shoot any gun, anytime, anywhere, even though her letter allowed her to fire weapons with training staff.
Well, for 2017, the documentation that we have shows that she did, and we actually have the photocopies of the targets that she had done.
Okay.
So the documentation that we received from the city showed that she did do the training.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Then
may I address the board and clarify?
Very short,
very
if you
short.
Don't mind.
So I just spoke with Terry Kapronica. Everything I'm given was given to me. There is, and this is why, if you want to speak to Chief Young, yes, there is two documents or a document that says no shooting outside of the training unit with the department issued weapons. And then she was told by Commander Rudy. The reason why Chief Young knows about that is because the sergeant went to Chief Young and said, this is unfair. So, yes, that did happen. Now, on my notes here, it says there was zero training from May to November. I just clarified with the sergeant. She is here in the room. If you'd like to speak with her, she said, yes, she did have the training sessions from May 17th, 24th, and the 31st. She did not pass on the qual on May, and then in November, like I said, she did have the training in November, the 9th, the 14th, and the 30th. December was the qualification. She did not pass the December 20th qualification. What I didn't know is that she did have three training sessions on May 17th, the 24th, and the 31st. So I need to clarify that. But, yes, she did have the training on November 9th, 14th, and 30th.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments before I ask for a motion? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
I guess I'll make a motion to restrict Terry Caprizi's Kapronica. Certification until such time as she qualifies for the service weapon.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Frank Milstead, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Nay. And the motion?
Aye.
We have one nay and the rest ayes. And
Chris Pittman was a nay.
And the motion carries. All right, we are going to move into the final action cases. Mr. Hargrave, 17-051.
Chairman, I need to recuse myself on this.
And the record reflects that. Thank you.
Thank you. This is a case involving dishonesty by Matthew Hedrick, Deputy Chief with the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. On March 21st of 2017, Post staff conducted a new hire audit on Matthew Hedrick, who had previously been appointed by the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. A review of documentation and reports in the file and a subsequent investigation revealed that Mr. Hedrick had given false and or misleading statements to the Arizona Department of Public Safety detective conducting his background investigation, as well as to the polygrapher who conducted his pre-hire polygraph examination. The board subsequently initiated proceedings on two allegations, the first being that on January 30th, 2017, Matthew Hedrick, who was in the hiring process with Pinal County, gave false and misleading statements to a polygrapher during a pretest interview, and that on February 22nd, 2017, he gave false misleading statements during background investigation conducted by the Arizona Department of Public Safety Detective. False statements in this matter concern Matthew Hedrick's description of an incident that took place in 2001 while he was employed as a peace officer with the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community Police Department. The evidence showed that on January 30th, 2017, he was given a polygraph exam during which he was asked why he was terminated from Salt River. He stated that he was breaking up a fight between a child and his mother, and when he threw the child to the side, the child fell into an irrigation ditch. February 22, 2017, DPS background investigator interviewed him, asked him about his termination from Salt River. He said he responded to a call for service. There was a 14-year-old boy attacking his mother. He threw the boy off his mother to prevent the assault. But what he told the background investigator and the polygrapher is not what actually happened. On November 20th of 2002, following a post-hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings, this board voted to suspend Mr. Hedrick's peace officer certification for 120 days for this very incident. At that hearing, Mr. Hedrick testified under oath that on the day in question, the boy's mother, while at jury duty, had asked another officer to ask Mr. Hedrick to help get her son to school. He thereafter rode his bike from the station to the boy's home, stopping on the way to check the water in the irrigation ditch where he intended to bathe the boy after taking him to school. When he got to the boy's house, the mother's cousin let him in the house, where he went to the boy's bedroom, picked him up, carried him outside, across the street to the ditch where he placed him in the water. He wasn't breaking up a fight. His mother wasn't even there. In addition to being suspended for that conduct in 2002, he was also disciplined by this board through a consent agreement in 2013 for a two-year suspension for sharing confidential law enforcement information with a non-law enforcement personnel. In that consent agreement, he acknowledged that his previous discipline by this board was for dropping a 9-year-old boy into an irrigation ditch to discipline him. At the hearing in this matter before the Administrative Law Judge, Office of Administrative Hearings on September 25th, 2018, before you, you have two documents. One is the Administrative Law Judge's decision, as well as a supplemental order of addendum in which the ALJ found that the board met its burden in establishing the allegations of dishonesty and that Mr. Hedrick's conduct constitute violations of your rule R13-4-109A 2, 8, and 12, those being willfully providing false information in connection with obtaining or reactivating certified status, malfeasance, misfeasance, or nonfeasance in office, and engaging in conduct that tends to disrupt, diminish, or otherwise jeopardize public trust in law enforcement. The Administrative Law Judge also found that the board should consider as aggravating factors his two prior disciplines with this board. Accordingly, the state would ask that the board adopt the administrative law judge's findings of fact 1 through 17 and conclusions of law 1 through 14 as set forth in the decision and the supplemental order, and based upon the dishonesty and aggravating factors, issue an order of revocation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Chairman, question. Seth, he's still working then at this, the tribal police in San Carlos?
No, he's working for the Pinal County Sheriff's
Office. Pinal County, okay, got it. And where is Pinal County on this issue?
I don't know. No one from, other than Mr. Hedrick, came and testified at the hearing.
Any other questions, comments for Mr. Hargraves? And who would like to speak on behalf? Anyone? Yes, please. Mr. Hedrick?
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I would ask we keep it to about 10 minutes maximum, if we could.
No problem.
Okay.
Good morning, board and chairman. I appreciate this opportunity. 15 years ago, I made a decision. And ever since that moment, I have done everything in my power to create a career that does not paint me in that decision I made. And in that time, I made it a point to serve my community with all my heart. It's 19 years. 17 years ago, that decision was made. I did not make any type of, my intent was not to deceive anybody. I came to Pinal County Sheriff's Office as Deputy Chief to once again help the members of that community, that county, in creating a better jail. My current assignment is the Jail Chief. In that 17 years time, 18 young men have been jumped out of gangs. Two neighborhoods have neighborhood watch programs that never happened in Indian country, ever. I had the opportunity to create a nationally renowned veteran inmate program at Pinal County Jail, in which I currently assist my peers in the state of Arizona in trying to establish the same type of program for veteran inmates. I feel like that this is an opportunity for some investigators to get the guy they didn't get 17 years ago. This is evident by the initial investigator who's since retired from post, who's here today, wanting to see my revocation of certification. Only reason why. I would challenge everybody on this board to recall an event 17 years ago, report it with accuracy, and then review your journal of that event and see how accurate you are. It's difficult. I admit, I did not depict the acts that I recalled correctly. It was 17 years ago. I was in a room in which an investigator said, "Give me the Reader's Digest version." That's what the investigator asked me. I had no intent to deceive the members of my county and the people which I serve. I'm offended. I'm embarrassed that you guys have to hear this. Something that happened 17 years ago. The statements that I made 17 years ago, I own. I own my career. But I can tell you this, I can produce 18 men, two neighborhoods, and over 70 veteran inmates who are thankful that I didn't hide after my initial decision 15 years ago. That I didn't duck away and try to finish my career hiding from post investigators. I was able to look my community in the eye and tell them, I love you and I'm going to serve you and I'm going to make you better than before I came. Investigators don't do that. Investigators don't go out in their communities and do what I do and do what you've done in your careers. It takes courage to step outside and do something great. To not hide and be afraid of getting a certification revoked. My intent was not to deceive. My intent was to get through this process because no matter what, regardless of what's saying today, I'm still going to be in Pinell County Sheriff's Office helping my fellow county members and other counties create great programs to make a difference. I will not hide. I will not shrink away. I will not be those cold and timid souls, as Theodore Roosevelt once said. I'm in the arena marred by my blood, sweat, and tears. The arena that a lot of people are afraid to get into. There are many things going on in this country right now. Many things. People being accused of things that have been done years ago. And thankfully, there's a group of men that stood up and made the right decision. Every one of you have had long careers. Every one of you have made mistakes. We're all fallible. But the one thing I'm proud of is I'm an honorable man, I'm an honorable father and husband, and I will never stop giving up the fight. Thank you for your time. I appreciate everything that every law enforcement does in their communities.
Thank you, Mr. Hedrick. Questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman? I do have a couple questions. First off, your current job is not as a sworn peace officer. You're the jail commander. So no matter what happens, you remain the jail commander.
You're right.
Okay. And then when you applied, if I guess what is perplexing to me is that isn't something that you forget about, because that's an incident that you got fired for. And I got disciplined in 1985 for doing something I remember like it was yesterday, because it's the only discipline I've ever had. So I can't believe that you didn't remember what you did or how you did it. But if you got fired for it, the discipline was done. What I don't understand is what's in it for you to not tell the truth about what happened instead of just living and owning it, because you want to own it here, but you didn't want to own it then. So I don't know if you can explain that.
I didn't remember it. I didn't remember it like you should. I didn't review my case. But you bring up a great point. Why would I need to lie? I had the job. I was appointed. I had nothing to gain. So for someone to paint it as some type of deception, I'm not being deceptive. I just didn't remember it like I should have.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. Mr. Hargraves?
Thank you. Chairman Masher, members of the board, honesty and integrity either mean something or they don't. Mr. Hedrickson saying that he owns this, but he doesn't own it. He says he doesn't remember it. He told it how he remembered it. Well, he remembered something that didn't happen. The mother wasn't there. He didn't pull off the boy from attacking his mother. She wasn't there. He went in the house, grabbed him, carried him outside to a ditch that he had already planned on putting him in before he got there. They're not even close to being the same issue that you could possibly misremember. And he says he owns it, but yet he's attacking a former board compliance officer who handled his first case, who just happens to be here for the staff's holiday party today, not to come see here and gloat over his recent discipline. But again, he's more apt to point fingers and blame everybody else other than himself. He has no one to blame but himself for that conduct. He's the one that chose to give a different story. And it's not 15, 17 years. Because when he was disciplined last time by the board, just a few years ago, when he was given a two-year suspension, when he signed that consent agreement, he acknowledged this conduct and specifically what it was. So if he's saying, he can't remember things over 15 years, the facts show it hasn't been 15 years. Again, honesty and integrity mean something or they don't in this profession. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any discussion, comments? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Any further discussion needed?
Yeah, I have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
So is he currently certified or not certified? And if he's certified, then it's to revoke. If he's not certified, then it's to not allow certification. Is that correct, Mr. Hargraves?
He is certified.
So he got his certification.
Right. If he wasn't, then there would be no jurisdiction here.
Okay. That's what I'm getting at. All right. So, Frank Milstead, I'm going to make the motion that we accept the findings and conclusion law by the administrative law judge and revoke certification.
Mr. Chairman, may I clarify for the record, the administrative law judge issued an administrative law judge decision and he did a supplement. Does your motion include the findings and those that are supplemented in the October 15th order?
Go back and look at that. That's the 1 through 14?
It is 1 through 14, and then he filed a supplemental order of addendum adding findings of fact 15, 16, and 17. And the supplemental order also struck conclusions of law 11, 13, and 14 and supplemented those as set forth in the order.
Further order. Just give me just a second. I don't have that page, ma'am, so let me look at 15, 16, and 17. Yes, I would agree that the supplement is part of that finding.
Okay, the motion has been amended to include 15, 16, 17 of the supplement, and
I'll second. And Alan Rybo seconds.
And we have a set law 11, 13, and 14. The supplemental order added findings of fact 15, 16, and 17, struck the original conclusions of law 11, 13, and 14, and supplemented the new conclusions as set forth in the supplemental order. Is your motion to?
Yes, that would be correct. And if I have to rephrase that, I'll probably screw it up, but I can work on it.
Okay. I think your motion was to adopt the administrative law judge's findings and conclusions as supplemented in the October 15th recommended order and decision.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
I have that amended motion and the second.
Alan Rodwell seconds.
And the second, is there further discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. We will be moving on to the next, 18-054, Mr. Hargraves.
Yes.
Chairman, I need to recuse myself on this matter.
Thank you. This is a case involving Gabriel Mercurio. He was a candidate for certification as a peace officer in the state of Arizona. On March 13th of this year, AZ Post received a termination report from the La Paz County Sheriff's Office with an effective date of March 12, 2018, regarding Mr. Mercurio, which indicated the agency was aware of conduct that may violate Post rules. The conduct occurred while Mr. Mercurio was attending the Western Arizona Law Enforcement Training Academy in March of this year. On June 20, 2018, this board voted to initiate proceedings for denial of peace officer certification. The allegations, which were the basis of the denial, were that on March 9th, 2018, recruit Mercurio, out of anger, physically pushed a fellow recruit during defensive tactics training. And further, when questioned on this incident by the defensive tactics instructors, recruit Mercurio advised them that he has anger issues and at times, while angry, he wants to kill people. A hearing on this matter was held before the Office of Administrative Hearings on October 23rd of 2018. Before you is the Administrative Law Judge's recommended decision consisting of 52 findings of fact and 22 conclusions of law, in which the Administrative Law Judge found that the allegations were established by the preponderance of the evidence, that Mr. Mercurio's conduct constitutes violations of Arizona Administrative Code R13-4-109, A, 8, and 12, and that he had failed to meet his burden to show that Post
was an error in denying certification. Accordingly, the state would ask that the board adopt the ALJ's findings of fact 1 through 52, conclusions of law 1 through 22, and issue an order denying certification. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, comments from Mr. Hargraves? Mr. Mercurio? Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Chris Houck on behalf of Gabriel Mercurio, who is seated at my left, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I urge you to reject acceptance of the ALJ conclusions of law and finding of fact for several reasons. Most importantly, is procedural due process violations. By that, I mean the allegations that Mr. Mercurio was accused of in the notice are two sections of the rules. Malfeasance and engaging in conduct that tends to disrupt. Unfortunately, testimony by Mr. Jacobs, Steve Jacobs of the Post, found its way into the court's ruling at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, where dishonesty was alleged on behalf of Mr. Mercurio. When Mr. Mercurio denied the statements attributed to him, Mr. Jacobs testified that Mr. Mercurio was being dishonest, and the ALJ incorporated that into its ruling, violating Mr. Mercurio's due process rights. He did not have notice that that allegation was going to be made, and the judge relied upon it. That's number one. Number two, Mr. Jacobs testified that even accepting the version of facts by the trainers at the academy, he could see a path for Mr. Mercurio to obtain his license. He should not be denied it. And they offered a consent decree, which would allow him to get some counseling and create a path for him to obtain his license. He was not represented by counsel. He did not accept that consent decree. But the key is Mr. Jacobs, who has almost 24 years with the Post, believed that there was a path for Mr. Mercurio to obtain his license, that even accepting their version of the facts, which he denies, that he ought to be able to have his license. And not only Mr. Jacobs, but also Captain Kirk Bagby of the La Paz County Sheriff's Office also believed and provided a letter in support at the hearing that Mr. Mercurio should have a path to receiving his license. That specifically, Captain Kirk Bagby stated that he's an advocate of military veterans and that there is a path for Mr. Mercurio to receive his license. And that, on the merits, makes sense. Mr. Mercurio has an honorable discharge as of 2014 from the military. He served in Afghanistan. He obtained a degree from GCU in 2017, and he became a security guard at GCU, was given a certificate commending him for his role in apprehending a burglary suspect. His current boss, the Quartzsite Police Chief, William Ponce, testified at the hearing, saying this man is level-headed, calm, and passive, actually. His pastor, who's known him since Mr. Mercurio was a sophomore in high school, said he has good moral character. And Mr. Mercurio testified that he wanted to become a peace officer, watching his daddy in the morning get ready to become to leave work and go to his correctional officer position. So the testimony was, question, do you This is a question to Mr. Jacobs. Based on the conduct that occurred on March 9th, you agreed that Mr. Mercurio could come back if you were to get some treatment and get back into training in a law enforcement role. Is that right? Answer, Mr. Jacobs. At that time, yes, sir. Opposing counsel asked this question. So there was a proposal to kind of reopen an avenue where Mr. Mercurio may potentially be able to be certified someday, correct? Well, it was presented to him. Yes.
We're just about out of time, so if you don't mind.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There were also key inconsistencies with regard to the testimony. The basis of the denial was that Mr. Mercurio responded with a push to a female cadet outside of a window of opportunity to respond. Everyone says he was hit in the face with the elbow, and he pushed the recruit back. The two training officers had inconsistent testimony. One said that he immediately pushed her back after being elbowed in the face. The other said, no, he dropped his pad. They said, pick it up again. He picked it up, and then he went and pushed her. So with those inconsistencies, we also say on the merits that his testimony is corroborated by one of the training officers. So I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, sir. Questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Hargraves, did you have some follow-up?
Yes.
Hit on a couple points that counsel just made. There was no due process issue here. There was no finding by the ALJ that his decision was based on any findings of lying or dishonesty. This board did not make allegations of dishonesty. There's no findings in the conclusion that there's findings of dishonesty. This was a hearing on a denial of certification. At that hearing, it was Mr. Mercurio who had the burden of proof to show that the board's decision to initiate to deny was wrong. As the ALJ pointed out, he failed to meet that burden. There were two allegations. One, that out of anger, he pushed a fellow recruit during training. In his testimony at the hearing, he acknowledged that he was using extra force beyond what was required when he pushed the fellow recruit. There were two training officers who heard him directly say, I have anger issues. When I get angry, I want to kill people. And then there's a letter from the commander of the academy who indicated that he said the same thing to him when he was being escorted out. Mr. Mercurio had the burden of proof in this hearing, and he failed to meet it. And there was discussion about the possibility of getting a consent agreement. That I would ask you to disregard that. It's not part of the record. It wasn't entered into. There was some discussion initially about a possibility of giving him a chance to maybe retain certification down the road, and he rejected it. It would only have been come into play if it was brought to this board, and this board decided to accept it, which you had no obligation to do. And at that time, it was offered. It was because of the comments, and at no time at that point had Mr. Mercurio indicated that he didn't make the statements. It was only after we got into discussion about possibilities that could leave the door open, he said, I never made those comments, which flies in the face of everyone else's testimony, eyewitnesses who claim that he did. Again, he had the burden of proof at this hearing, and according to the ALJ, he failed to meet it. And the ALJ acknowledged that from the administrative law judge's review of Mr. Mercurio's testimony, that he has a bias against the other individual who he's claiming acted out against him, that he was retaliating against. The ALJ did not quite find him credible. He found that preponderance of the evidence shows that he did make those statements. And the people that heard the statements were concerned enough to bring it to their chain of command. And they testified how an officer who has anger issues and wants to kill people is a liability. It's a liability to any department that hires him. It would be a liability to this board if you were to certify him. In this case, Mr. Mercurio failed to meet his burden to show that the board's initial decision to deny was wrong. I would ask you to accept the ALJ's recommendation and to uphold the denial. Thank you.
Questions? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
I've got a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
And I apologize for not being able to be there, but just I'm a little confused. So is the decision being based on the extracurricular activity during defensive tactics or the statement of anger that's being made, or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. There were two allegations. One is the excessive force out of anger during the training, and the second one is the comment.
And based on the comment, and I don't know if this is something that you may have already alluded to and I just didn't hear, was there any other type of evaluation done based on that comment? You know, everybody goes through a psych test during their process. Was there a reinitiation of any kind of psychological analysis to determine if that statement in and itself is something that is a conclusion that he would eventually act upon?
There is nothing to indicate that. The agency let him go shortly thereafter. There would be no reason for them to follow up on that.
Okay, I don't have any other questions.
Any other comments or questions? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Helen Robbie will make the motion to accept the administrative law judge's decision and order and deny a request for certification.
Chris Pittman, second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, and the motion carries. We're going to be moving on to the next case, Mr. Hargraves, 18-107.
Thank you. Before you for consideration is a consent agreement for a six-month suspension of certification for Luis Acedo, former officer with the Navajo Division of Public Safety. On May 4th of this year, Officer Acedo, whom at the time was a current officer with the Navajo Division of Public Safety, took a polygraph exam as part of his pursuit of a sworn officer position with the Chino Valley Police Department. During polygraph examination, he disclosed that he had had sexual contact and intercourse on two occasions while working for the Navajo Division of Public Safety. First incident occurred in his marked vehicle while he was off duty. The second occurred in a personal vehicle while he was on duty. Chino Valley Police reported the misconduct to his department and to AZ Post. Officer Acedo admitted to the allegations and resigned from the department in lieu of termination. Before you is a proposed consent agreement for a six-month suspension of certification to run from July 18th of 2018 and ending on January 18th, 2019. Be happy to answer any questions.
Comments or questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Helen Rodwell will make the motion that we accept the consent agreement decision order and impose a suspension of peace officer certification to run from July 18, 2018 and ending on January 18, 2019.
Frank Milstead, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries.
Thank you.
Moving on to the next case, 18-068. Mr. Perkovich, good morning, sir.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Mark Perkovich, your compliance manager here at AZ Post. This first case, back on September 19th, 2018, the board voted to initiate proceedings against peace officer certification held by Mr. Anthony Duran. He was formerly with the Superior Police Department. The notice of complaint was mailed by regular and certified mail both. The certified mailing was noted to have been signed for on October 2nd, 2018, by an occupant of Mr. Duran's address of record, and to date, Mr. Duran has not requested a hearing. In summary, back on April 13, 2017, Commander Anthony Duran had sexual intercourse with an adult woman in his office located at the Superior Police Department. Commander Dorn was on duty at the time, clearly visible in the video, and partially dressed in his Superior Police Department uniform. Commander Dorn memorialized this event using a body camera, which was issued to him by the agency. The video was not discovered, however, until February 28, 2018, when the office manager with the Superior Police Department attempted to retrieve an unrelated video from Commander Doran's assigned desktop computer within his office. It was during the course of this investigation into the video depicting Commander Doran in a sex act that investigators also discovered pornographic material on his computer, including one video determined to be child sexual abuse material. A criminal investigation was opened and later presented to the Pinal County Attorney's Office, who later declined prosecution. On April 10, 2018, AZ Post received a notice of termination for Mr. Doran from the Superior Police Department with an effective date of April the 9th, 2018. Research by AZ Post staff has determined in past similar fact-based circumstances, the board action has resulted in revocation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Comments, questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Frank Milstead, I say that we accept the findings of fact and conclusion of law and impose a sanction of revocation.
Tom Rodwell seconds.
Motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And now we'll be moving on to the new cases, 18-105. Mr. Jacobs, good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, Steve Jacobs, compliance specialist. The first case that I bring to you today is a former Phoenix police officer who retired on June 29th of 2018. This case came to the attention of the Phoenix Department initially as a complaint made by a female who said that she had been sexually assaulted by this gentleman. However, the investigation found that it was a he said, she said. The prosecution was declined. No likelihood of successful prosecution or conviction. And during the investigation, it was also found that this officer had violated the department policy by downloading body-worn camera footage onto his personal cell phone for non-law enforcement reasons. Although the report did not describe the footage that was downloaded, I spoke with the investigator, and it had to do with the pursuit arrest that they had made of a violent act. And this happened when this lieutenant was a sergeant. Are there any questions?
I have questions. Go ahead. Mr. Chair. Steve, have we had cases in the past where officers have downloaded body-worn camera?
This is the first one that I've brought to you. I have another one coming. I've had two recently. This is the first that I can recall.
And did he use it for any other purposes that we know of other than personal use? We don't have any information.
I have no information. When they started to question him regarding this matter, he submitted a letter of intent to retire and didn't answer questions.
So my thought process is this something that would be agency discretion as a violation of policy, or do you want to make a post-rule violation, in which case would be more to come, I suspect.
That is a decision.
That's our conversation. Okay. Thank you. I'm open to that conversation, I guess.
Any other conversation, reference to that, comments? Having none.
Please. Mr. Chair, I do have a question. I guess, are we looking at here the alleged criminal conduct that did not result in a criminal prosecution? But since we have a lower standard, we're asked to look at that incident?
Well, I guess we could talk that, but my concern with that is it's been resolved as not a case, and the issue for us is how often are we going to chase after. I mean, it's already resolved. There's not a criminal violation. So my concern is that this is officers are using body cameras. They're downloading it, perhaps, into their own personal use. What are they doing with that? If we can demonstrate they did something with it, like put on YouTube, shared it with other people. But how deep do you want to go into that as a post violation? Or do we want to just say agency discretion? He was dismissed from his agency, and the next time he applies for a job in law enforcement, that being consideration.
Mr. Chair, I'm less persuaded by the download, if that is in fact what was on his personal cell phone, as I am the allegations that he sexually assaulted this girl. And I don't specifically recall how we've handled these situations in the past. I mean, clearly a sexual assault allegation, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, is different than the standard we look at here. And I'm just not sure how we've handled these situations in the past.
If I could, Mr. Ayler, and Mr. Chair, on issues that have not been able to be proven one way or the other, the board has opted in many occasions to RF that file to research to resolve in the future. What that would entail is if this gentleman applied for certification again, that we could request the background investigator or instruct the background investigator or the agency want to appoint him to try resolving this matter through their background process to include polygraph. The reason it's not addressed in, as an allegation in this complaint is because I don't feel that we could meet a burden even of a preponderance of evidence that there was a sexual assault that occurred. The female went to the house willingly. She consumed a large amount of alcohol. She remembered going to his bedroom and kissing him and then had no memory until she woke up the next day, according to her. Only without her knowing what happened, the only person that knows what happened that night is this officer.
Mr. Chairman, one question, just for clarification. I can't decide by reading this if the VView video that was on his phone, is that a documentation of the events in his bedroom, or was it some unrelated matter?
No, it's completely an unrelated matter.
Okay,
it was just they did go to his phone to and get a search warrant of his phone as it related to the issue with the woman. It was incidental to that warrant that they found the VPU footage. And it's actually several years prior in a foot chase, on-duty foot chase, that he was involved in when he was a sergeant.
Yes, sir.
So have we suspended or revoked certifications in the past for breaking department policy? I'm trying to just in my head kind of go back to Chief's question of what is it that we as a board, how deep do we want to wade into this? So not necessarily this specific policy, but policies in general.
So my recollection is it depends on the severity. I think we've let some agency discretion for, like, failure to take reports, but we've had an overabundance of reports not taken. We've asked for an investigation. And so I think it depends on the severity, at least in my recollection.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify from my standpoint, and I tend to agree with Mr. Jacobs' analysis here, that even under a preponderance standard, given the evidence we have, you know, it probably wouldn't meet that burden. But I can see other instances where a prosecution office may decline, but we perhaps as a board should still look at it from our perspective.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments, questions? Having none, I'd ask for a motion, please.
So I'll attempt a motion, but I'm not too sure whether I'm doing resolve in future or no action agency discretion. So if we wanted the next agency that he might consider applying to look at this, we would make it RF?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Okay. Then I'll make the motion that we resolve this case as a resolve in future.
Frank Mills to the second.
A motion.
Before you vote, if we can just alleged conduct doesn't have to do with the potential sexual assault. If that's the issue you want to resolve in the future, could you just make it clear in the motion, resolve that issue?
Can I not ask to resolve both issues?
You can.
Then I would do both issues.
Whatever, just want to make sure it's clear so someone looking at it later knows what needs to be looked at.
I think both issues need to be resolved. Thank you.
That would be added to the motion.
And second again.
And Frank second again. Is there any comments, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to the next, 18-137, Mr. Jacobs.
Yes, this involves a former La Paz County Sheriff's Deputy, who on August 18, 2018, had a squad party at his residence. Alcohol was consumed during that party. As most people had left, this deputy went up to a co-worker, female, and put his hand down her pants and fondled her genitalia, and also put his hand up her blouse and fondled her breast. When interviewed, the deputy remembered having put his hand up her blouse and admitted to doing so, but could not recall whether he did or did not place his hand down the front of her pants. Are there any questions? This has been charged, and usually we will wait for a criminal prosecution. However, since he made an admission to placing his hand under her blouse and fondling her breast, I brought it to you at this time.
Comments, questions? We have a motion.
Al Morago makes a motion to initiate proceedings.
Andy LaFever, second.
Motion and second. Discussion on the motion. Having none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 18-135, Mr. Jacobs.
Yes, this case involves a former Colorado River Indian Tribes police officer who on October 12th of 2018 used his position as a peace officer to obtain passes, what they call all-access passes to a special event that was going on the Colorado River. This was a boat drag race event. He went to the security person in charge of the security for this and reported that he would be using his personal golf cart to patrol, to provide security, and was issued two all-purpose passes since he was going to be in an unmarked golf cart, and also he reported that they were going to be using their departmental side-by-side, like a Polaris or something like that. So that's why he got two passes. It was later found out that that was not the case, that two marked vehicles had been assigned to that detail. And after he was investigated and given his Garrity warning, he denied having solicited the passes for other than duty-related matter. Are there any questions?
Having none, may I have a motion?
Frank Milstead, I suggest we initiate proceedings.
Alan Rodwell seconds.
Motion second. Comments, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And moving on to 18089. Ms. Waite, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. Last case of the morning. This case on former Sergeant Mario Parra of the Holbrook Police Department. In May of this year, the interim police chief in Holbrook requested assistance from the Navajo County Sheriff's Office to do an administrative review / investigation of the past actions of Sergeant Mario Parra. Information had been developed by the Holbrook Police Department and through complaints made by deputies of the Navajo County Sheriff's Office that Sergeant Parra had been disrespectful to citizens on calls for service and had shown a lack of performance in his official duties as a peace officer. So this investigation revealed seven different instances between August 3rd, 2012, all the way up through April 28th, 2018, where he failed to do the following. Sergeant Parra failed to Mirandize an aggravated assault suspect prior to questioning, which resulted in the criminal case being dismissed. The aggravated assault case was against an officer of the Holbrook Police Department. He failed to impound evidence in an assault case. He failed to arrest a husband for domestic violence assault against the wife. He failed to impound evidence and properly investigate a business burglary. He just refused to do it, so the other officer that was there decided to do it. He delayed his response to a burglary alarm call after advising dispatch he was on scene. Where he was actually was in a drive-through ordering food. He failed numerous times to activate his body camera during calls for service, which is a policy violation, and he was discourteous to citizens during calls for service. One instance during this time frame, he actually encouraged a individual on a disorderly conduct call to assault the other male subject that was involved in the disorderly conduct call. He actually said he would turn his back and allow the assault to occur. They put him on administrative leave pending the investigation, and he retired while on administrative leave. Be happy to answer any questions.
Having no comments, questions, may I have a motion?
Frank Melstead, I suggested we resolve this in the future, all the issues that are listed, 1 through 8.
Alan Rodwell, second.
Motion, second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And Mr. Giordano, do we have any future agenda items?
The only thing we talked about earlier, I'd like to discuss NABO DPS update from January. I'd also like to entertain Chief Rodbell's agenda item, whatever that would be. We'd be willing to put that on the, if it's appropriate, on the January agenda if there's time to prepare.
Can I mention that, what that is now, or just
the topic with no discussion?
Well, you can put out a general agenda item to discuss issues that the board may want to pursue in rulemaking. To discuss many things, or you want to make it limited to just a few, it's...
I would get, you're free to mention the topic. We just can't have any further discussion on it at this meeting.
Okay. So at a meeting 2 meetings ago, we had a young man whose time ran out as a result of an appeal process. So if it's... So I wanted to say something that if it's no fault of their own, the appeal process carries beyond their certification, that they should retain their certification until it's resolved. However, whatever that looks like. Now, if they're postponing things and putting things off, then it should be open for that discussion. But if it's through no fault of the individual involved, they should be able to run out their appeals.
We'll do some research and put that on the agenda item for at January for further discussion.
Okay, thank you.
And I think that I'd just like to say one thing. It's the last meeting of our year. I'd like to thank the staff for all their hard work this last year. It doesn't go unnoticed. It's a very busy year, so thank you all very much for everything you've done, all the hard work. I'd like to thank the board as well. And God bless. Merry Christmas. So,
and just a reminder to the board, we'll have our holiday luncheon across the way after the meeting.
Thank you all very much. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Rich. Glad you
could make it. The guy here is 20 years and just decided to crash and burn.
Right? 49. He's not going to apply again. What the hell?